Welcome to another weekly installment of the Vixen's Vault. I am your host, Nancy Planetta, a.k.a. the Wiccan Vixen. I'd like to welcome you all to my show. Today is Sunday, September the 27th, 2015. It is 8 o'clock on the nose p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Welcome to the show, everybody. Sorry about last week, a little bit of a hiatus. I was stricken with a stomach bug that kind of took me back a few, and I didn't think y'all would enjoy my hysterical reprieves in between breathing exercises to not absolutely scream in pain. So I decided to go ahead and put the show on a break for a week and then come back fresh and feeling good. Tonight, we are going to discuss a subject that those of you who know me, who have listened to my show over the past 7 years and yet actually been on the air that long, you know, there's one thing in the paranormal that truly intrigues me. In fact, it's something that actually has kept me going in this field through thick, through thin, through the drama, through, you know, all the wonderful things that we can't stand about the paranormal. In fact, I always tell people paranormal 12-step program times. You literally go through so many different phases of it, and you want to come forward and surge forward, and then there are days you just don't want to be involved. But there's always been one part of it that drew to it, and that was trying to unlock, not just, I want to say the psychology of it, but it's really not the psychology. It's more of the nature of the beast, and I call it the beast for a reason. I always tell people the reasons I'm involved in the paranormal are very personal. I'm looking for answers. I'm on a personal quest, and I always tell people, you know, I know everybody's going to say, oh, I do it for everybody else. I do it so I can help people find inner peace. I do it for this. And I got to tell y'all, and please excuse language, but that's a crock of shit. Most of us are in this field for a very personal reason. We either had an experience or we experience things on a regular basis that we want answers for. And while helping people can be a wonderful side asset, yet no, humans are inherently selfish. That's kind of how we're born. That's how we're geared. And we truly, most of us have a need to understand certain things, especially things we cannot explain. So, yes, this evening, I actually have somebody who is very, very involved in the field of neurology on the show tonight. And I got to tell you, I had a long conversation with this gentleman a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't believe how much we had in common as far as thought process went. But I think what amazed me is that this is a formally educated person in this area, whereas mine, my thought process is based a lot off of instinct. It's based off of my own feelings, my own gut instincts, physically how I reacted to certain things, and kind of very slowly in over 24 years now I've been in this field, piecing things together through personal experience. And not only that, but talking to people in the field who, you know, God help me, there's not a better word for this, but I hate this word. People who we deemed to be psychic. And I really hate that word because I don't see that word as encompassing what gifts certain people have. But you know what? This is a discussion to better bring my guest on board with. This evening with me, I have Dr. Chuck Kennedy. Dr. Kennedy, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Like I said, I've been so super excited about having you on because you and I had contact, and I just could not believe the amount of information that you had, number one, that put things together for me. I think we both had connections in certain areas. You lean more into neurology and how neurons work within the brain, and I kind of lent more to the genetic factor, DNA, what is embedded in our DNA. I don't believe in junk anything anywhere in the universe, and I tell people that over and over. There is no such animal as junk in this universe. The universe is a beautiful thing, and it's put together for a reason. Junk does not exist. Everything has a reason, especially our genetic code.
For a reason, even though sometimes we don't know what that reason is.
Yeah, you know, it's like I said, when I was introing this into the show, I don't like the word psychic. I've never liked that word. I don't even know if I like the word supernatural, because to me, a lot of what people deem to be gifts or gifted people is an incredibly natural thing. It's as natural as breathing. And I don't
really
understand
how,
you know, I,
unfortunately, we get stuck with a lot of the terminology that the TV gives us. And since the paranormal's been a big part of TV for about the past 10 years, most of the ghost hunters out there, they got all their training watching TV. They've never actually had any formal training in it. They just know what they've seen on TV, and they accept what it is. And that's where TV combines everything together. On one TV show, you'll have ghosts, you'll have demons, and you'll have the zombie apocalypse. And it's all the same thing because it fit into their half hour of TV. And in reality, it's not like that at all. It's completely different. And especially in a paranormal, we're redefining. Sure.
Well, literally, because again, you're dealing with, when you talk about TV, people don't understand how much TV literally actually does affect your brain waves. Do you literally, I mean, if you think about it and think about how many hours a day or even an evening that people tune in, and a lot of people fall asleep with their TVs on. Do you think that could actually have an effect on perception and the reality of things?
All right, let me give you a good example that people see. What percent, and you're an EMT, so you're well-versed on this, what percent of CPR outside of the hospital is effective? How often does it actually save a life?
Very true. Very, very, very true. Right. You're right.
In reality, it only works outside of a hospital 9% of the time.
9 to 12%, I think it was. Yep.
Mm-hmm, depending on the study you read. And the thing is, but they've interviewed people and said, well, how often do you think it's effective? How effective do you think it is? And on average, they say it's about 80% effective. And the reality of that is Harvard did a study on why do people think CPR is so effective? And it's because they watch TV. And on the TV show ER, on Chicago Hope, all of those TV shows, they do CPR and they bring the person back alive. And, you know, I've been in healthcare 40 years. I've done a lot of CPR.
Yep.
And it is not that effective outside of the hospital. Most of the time it doesn't even get started in time. But I told that to a friend of mine about a month ago. I said, yeah, it's only effective 9% of the time outside of a hospital. And he called me a liar. So I presented him with the study, and I even presented him with the study and why he thinks it's self-effective. He goes, no, it almost always works. And I go, you're dreaming. People watch stuff on TV, and that's reality to them.
Well, and actually, it's just great. A terrific counterpoint on that is, why do you think so many we had to pass so many Good Samaritan laws? Because medically trained people, when they were out and about, if somebody was having a heart attack or there was a medical emergency, they were not treating them because of the failure ratio and the fact that they would end up getting sued.
Exactly.
In fact, I remember when I was going for my 99, I can remember talking to the different medics, and they were saying, you know, whatever you do, if somebody, you know, it collapses in front of you, okay, yeah, then try to help, but think twice, because the family, if they get your name, can come after you. You can be liable. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you know, doing CPR, you end up breaking a rib most of the time. And then once you break a rib, now family's suing. And I know a guy that was sued who, he did the CPR outside the hospital. It was effective. He saved the guy's life. And the guy sued him for a busted rib. And they went to court, and the judge looked at the guy and said, are you insane? Are you literally insane? This guy just saved your life and you're going to sue him? What the hell's wrong with you? But I know what you mean.
Well, and again, it gets back to, you know, the perception of things and how our brains function. And like, and it's not necessarily the psychology. It comes to, you and I had a long discussion, and we were talking about how neurons fire, and you had shared with me what you thought, actually life, I think, was basically what happens at the point of death. In fact, you and I have gone back and forth multiple times on threads in regards to this, where, you know, I think I posted an article last week about near-death experience and whether, you know, whether or not it was neurons misfiring, which it's you can make some connections with neurons misfiring, but it doesn't fill all the gaps. It most certainly does not fill all the gaps.
All.
No. And like I said, coming from, you know, like I said to you, when I discussed it with you, you know, basically you're able to wrap the technicalities of it together for me. Whereas I'm kind of going based off, you know, yes, some medical training, but on the other side of it, more just the sensibility of what I feel or what I know to be true. I think I told you when you're in a paranormal area or an active area, what we'll call an active area, you can feel the frequency changes. You can feel a difference. Something's not right. It's almost like your fight or flight instinct, your most basic animal instincts trigger. And
that's an interesting discussion there, the whole fight or flight. It's funny you brought that up, because I was involved in a thread about a week ago from a guy up in Illinois, and they were talking about being in an area of the top, like you just described, and they get itchy skin. And they're going, well, you know, there's nothing physiological that would cause itchy skin. And I'm going, well, yeah, it can be an adrenal response, not just fight or flight, but just when your body starts releasing adrenaline, it can make your skin itch. And they're going, no, it has to be because the ghost touched you. There's nothing that could happen to the within the body that would cause that. And I go, yeah, there, it can happen, but it still isn't. The thing is, your body, the reason you're kicking in the fight or flight is you're knowing something's there. Otherwise, you wouldn't even have to worry about an adrenal response. But your senses are picking up that you're not alone. And yeah, you may be touched, but that's not necessarily going to cause your skin to itch. But if you know something's going on, it's going to increase your heart rate. When it increases your heart rate, your pituitary releases enzymes to trigger your adrenals sitting in your kidneys to kick out more adrenaline, and that's going to make your skin itch. So,
and you know, it literally is. And like I said, it is a fight or flight, but, you know, people too need to be aware that it's not necessarily because of sensing something else is there. It's more of a disquiet. And I've said that to people, and not a lot of it can be because you've lost your horizon in these places, because you're in the dark. And I tell people, you know, if you're not used to being losing, you know, basically you have to be used to being able to desensitize to your environment. In other words, go into the dark, lose that horizon, and not lose your balance. Because that's what happens. A lot of people go off balance and they don't understand that that's what's occurring, and they freak out a little bit.
But a lot of what happens too, and this is the whole key to my Project Psi research, is that so much of our paranormal connection, even though we want to believe it's consciously, it's really subconscious.
Yes.
And so subconsciously, you know, things are going on, and eventually your subconscious gets around to telling your conscious part. But things are going on in your brain even before you consciously realize it. And that's where the connection is made. And it's subconsciously, when a medium connects with a spirit, I know, and it comes out of their mouth, what's going on, that's the conscious side of it. But subconsciously is where the connection is made. And a big part of why that happens subconsciously is our subconscious brain is a quantum brain, working in waveforms and not particles. And it really is a quantum universe. And when you get down to where all that energy sits on the Planck scale, that's the energy that from different souls, our living souls and the dead souls. And when a medium connects with another soul, and they're talking soul to soul, it's done on a quantum basis. And that's where all the connection is made. Then when our subconscious gets around to it, it lets our conscious mind know what's going on. But that connection is first made on a quantum level.
I agree with that. I think this was part of a discussion you and I had that day on the phone. And my actually, folks, to give you all an understanding, my discussion with him is actually more about the dream world than it was about death. But we kind of came to some mutual conclusions in the same respect, because in my understanding, what I understand to be true with the dream world, at least for me, in some ways, I'm connecting to what psychologists will call the unconscious. Pagans will call it the Akashic. I actually refer to it as the grid. I think you guys have heard me say that multiple times on this program where I say it's the grid. Some people conserve the grid, and the grid would be basically, you know, when you think about matter, you think about carbon, you think about the resonation of matter coming together to form a solid form. The grid goes beyond that. It's the trillions upon trillions upon trillions of not even nanoparticles. We're going smaller than nanoparticles. Like he said, it's a quantum level. And when you're talking quantum, basically, you know, it's like taking a picture and digitizing a billion times. I mean, it's breaking it down to its most basic particle. And to me, that's what the unconscious is. It is everything that surrounds us. Time, space, everything you can imagine is that grid. And I think we're all connected. Like I said, we're part of it. It's not that just we're connected to it. We are part and parcel, a part of this grid. But some of us are able to jump our shell. In other words, we're able to project our energy into the grid and send and receive information from the grid. Mediums do it in one way. They're connecting with something that's had life, that has walked, has memory. Whereas, like with me, I'm a dreamer. So with me, I'm connecting with time and space. I'm seeing things that I shouldn't see. And I think we also had a discussion that my fiance and I shared dreams, which
that
we were getting
my
into.
Mind.
Yeah, we were getting into a very interesting.
I got to get the two of you hooked up to in the lab, and I want to see that on the EEG because I love that. I'm not questioning it. I think it's amazing, and I think probably more people have that than they realize, but they've never put two and two together. And I'm happy that, well, how could that happen? Well, there's a lot of talk about, you know, have you ever met your soulmate? And I'm not talking star-crossed lovers. I'm talking the person who you start a sentence, they can complete it. They call you up on the phone as you're dialing them because you want to talk to them about XYZ, and they're calling you about XYZ. And it's you're both on the same wavelength. And there's a lot of theories that when the Big Bang started, when that bang went off, and the universe exploded and it expanded at a massive rate. But shortly after that, everything slowed down, and now the universe is still expanding, but it's much slower. But at that point where it slowed down, there's a physicist in Italy, Paolo Zizzi. Her quantum theory is that right after the Big Bang, when it stopped and started to slow down, that was called the big wow. That was the moment of consciousness, when consciousness started. Now, if when the Big Bang started, a part of carbon, as it exploded, part formed you, and part of that piece of carbon formed the other person, you two are connected now at the big wow, and that's how you can share thoughts, and that's how you can share dreams. And Paolo Zizzi puts it to the big wow, and right after the Big Bang happened, because everything, including us, is carbon-based. And when all that carbon expanded, if one piece of carbon split in two, and now that piece of carbon is two different people, they're mentally connected. And again, on a quantum level, on a subconscious level, and that's why you can share dreams, because you don't have to use any words. You don't have to say it out loud. Nobody else hears you, but you two are sharing a dream. And I think that is so beautiful. I can't wait to get you in the lab.
I don't know if it's beautiful. Like, some of the dreams are kind of quirky. Like, you know, we had the one time that I had a very interesting dream, and he woke up last night. He was describing it to me because he knows I do a dream analysis class. That's one of the things. So we do discuss our dreams because sometimes he'll have a question or I'll be disturbed by something I dreamt, and I'll talk to him just to vent. But we found that there were common denominators in our dreams. And it's like, wait a minute. How is that possible? How statistically, how is that trouble. And like I said, you start doing some research, and I know, I think I told an article looking for answers. So that's what I do. I read an article about the U.S. Army conducting some testing because they were having problems with their special ops officers, where the wives of some of these guys knew very, 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 very sensitive information about some of the missions. And it turned out that these guys weren't, the women were dreaming it. And so the Army started doing some really in-depth research on it because apparently they were sharing dreams. And this was classified stuff that was coming out. And I thought, you know what? So this is not strange. It's not unheard of that this happens, that there are people that, you know, they're aware that people are sharing thoughts in that dreamscape. But to me, it makes sense. If you think about the way energy works, and if you're sleeping with your heads next to each other, it makes sense that our fields would be crossing, and that that information could be shared.
And just if anybody wants to experiment with that, just when you cuddle up to that person who's special to you, and you sit there in a quiet, there's no TV in, no radio, no internet, you're nice and quiet and cuddling up, and you can hear your hearts beating separately. And then a minute later, they're beating at about the same rate. And then a minute later, they aren't just beating at the same rate, they're beating at the exact same time. The synchronicity kicked in, and your heart's beating at the same time, the same rate as they are. Your breathing is the same as them. And so why would your dreams be any different? The only downside to it is, you know, you can't go and have a good fantasy dream without your partner knowing about it. That kind of sucks. But other than that, you know, but truly, people out there, if you want to try it, you know, just cuddle up with that special person and give it a couple of minutes. But notice your breathing, notice your heartbeat, and you will fall into the same pattern, the same rhythm, the exact same time as that other person. It'll happen every time.
Yeah, you sync up, and it's kind of like when you put a bunch of women together. We all, our periods, excuse, you know, again, for those who get offended, I am so sorry, but we do. We sync.
Too bad. It's part of syncing. Life. Too bad.
And any male, any male within a 50-mile radius needs to run and hide at one time in the month when we all sync up together at the same time. So it's just, and again, we have to remember we are animals. People forget that. Yes, we are intelligent animals, but we're still part of the animal kingdom. We were meant to be pack animals, and we were meant to be migratory. And, you know, people hate it when I say
part of it is true. That what makes us we are is energy, and that energy will always sync together.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you have to, it's so funny. Give me 1 second. I'm going to say hello. Okay, everybody in the chat. Hi, I see you guys. I see all of you. They're all talking because they're enjoying this conversation. Hi, TG. Hi, Lloyd. Hi, Porter. Hi, Chuck. Hi, everybody. Okay, back to the subject matter. I just had to do that, though, because they're kind of funny. They're saying, I was just thinking the exact same thing. See, yes. I mean, these are questions that I think we all have, those of us who think beyond the immediate face plant of the paranormal. When you start really considering what what you're discussing and different theories of it, you have to go to energy. There's no two ways about that.
Everything is energy. Yeah. And that is the only thing that explains what a spirit is because, as Einstein said, energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So just because our body dies out doesn't mean that our soul, our spirit, our consciousness doesn't continue. But then it's just, how do we access that energy? And that energy is sitting there on the plane scale. The plane scale is the true information superhighway. It's not the internet. It's all there on the plane scale because that's the energy from history. It's all there, and it's just accessing that energy and communicating with it. And we know that the plane scale is a quantum scale, and our conscious mind thinks digitally. And it's kind of like if you take a VHS tape and you try to cram it into your DVD player and you can't figure out why you can't see the damn movie. It's because there's two different processes going on. And we know scientifically that in our conscious mind, in our subconscious mind, we have neurons, billions of neurons. And every neuron has 16 microtubules. And microtubules do operate on a quantum fashion. It's a waveform. And then when events happen, the wave collapses. And the microtubules are coded in a binary sense of either using tubulin protein. And those are where our memories are formed. But it's also when we're trying to access the universe, that waveform, that energy in the microtubules can then, on a quantum level, that's where it can superposition those electrons that form the tubulin, and we can reach out to other spirits. We can reach out to other dimensions. When we have somebody that's using telekinesis, which basically remote viewing or remote healing is telekinesis. That person can send out protons and electrons from their microtubules to that distant location and then bring that back, because on a waveform, it can go forward or backward in time. Now people think, oh, well, but you can't go backward in time. Well, that's not true. Yes, and let me give you a perfect example. We know scientifically, it's been demonstrated in multiple neurological labs, that if you see an event, it takes you about 500 milliseconds or half a second to recognize that event happened. Even though you can't do anything yet, you just recognize that the event happened. Now, picture a baseball player. That guy standing at home plate, he's 60 feet from the pitcher, and the pitcher throws a ball down at 90 miles an hour. So this ball's coming 132 feet a second, and it's only going 60 feet. So it's going to get there in less than half a second. So by the time that batter sees the ball leave the pitcher's hand, by the time he realizes that, that ball's over home plate. That's conscious. Subconsciously, his subconscious mind is working about 40,000 times faster than his conscious mind, can see that ball leave the pitcher's hand, see where it's going, and that guy picks up his bat off his shoulder and takes a swing. Now, the only way he can respond in time is because he's responding on a subconscious level, and that's a quantum level. And that's one of the most perfect examples of how our brain does operate on a quantum level.
Basically, you know, when you and I were talking, you had mentioned that multiple times, that basically the brain is a quantum computer. And I agree with that. I 100% agree with that, because I kept making the analogy that I saw the entire anatomy basically as a beautiful computer, as a completely gorgeous, basically a bioelectrical system. And my thought is that, you know, we were talking about, you, of course, have your theory with the neurons, which I 100% agree on. But me, I kind of go back to the actual, again, the DNA and the way it's shaped, and the fact that it's actually shaped, you know, in the form, basically the same structure form as a superconductor. And I always tell people, I think that's a router. I think our DNA is actually a kind of like our router. It's what gives us the ability to project back and forth. I mean, it's oscillating. So to me, it's like, go ahead.
And to a degree, I agree with you. And I think the DNA defines, but I don't think the DNA has that much to do with the communication end of it, because it doesn't have the energy. A neuron gives off 70 microvolts every time a dendrite and an axon connect, where the DNA doesn't have any energy source. And yes, and in the brain and the neurons, we do have energy. And they create their own energy using calcium ion channels. Because, you know, when we want to measure the brain, we use an EEG. We want to measure a muscle, we use an EMG. And we want to measure the electrical activity of the heart, we use an EKG. But the thing is, when I was born, batteries weren't included. So where does all that electrical activity come from? And it comes from calcium ion channels. When the calcium the sodium shifts out and the calcium moves in, that creates the spark that shoots down the Purkinje fibers of the heart, and your heart contracts. And in the brain, every time axon releases a neurotransmitter that connects to another dendrite, bam, it gives off about 70 microvolts. Now, the interesting thing during a paranormal experience, we found when a medium is communicating with another spirit, instead of 70 microvolts, it can go up to a volt and a half because there's so much energy there between the communication of your neurons to another soul. It can give off as much as a volt and a half, which is way more than the typical 70 microvolts when you get a thought of, gee, I'd like to order a pizza. So all of this activity and using the 16-channel EEG machine I have, I can see what parts of the brain are active during what operation. And that's where I triggered the whole working with Reverend Mother Christina Rake. We're mapping out the parts of the brain that are being used for communication in meditation and communication during mediumship. And we're hoping we know we can get some possessions, not demonic, but spirit possession, because there are a lot of people that have spirit possessions. But we'd love to find a full-blown, and they're very rare, but we'd like to find a full-blown demonic possession and hook them up to the machine and see what's actually going on.
Yeah, I think I'd like to be privy to that, because I told you during my conversation with you that I have a real hard time with demonic possession. I think a lot of it is psychology. It is psychologically based. I think a lot of it is because we're pre-programmed, both religiously, because I mean, let's be frank, I may not be Christian, but about 90% of the population in this country is, and have a Christian background and a Christian upbringing. If they're not, the other, there's another 7% of other major religious backgrounds that also still have a belief in demonics and demonology. And so if they're not Christian, most other beliefs have that belief also.
You're not Christian, but were you originally raised Christian?
I'm very lucky duck here. I was raised in a Catholic family, very strong Catholic family. I think I told you, I stepped away when I was 12 years old. I stepped away because of my dreams and something a priest said. However, I've always told people I have no regrets. I think the Catholic religion is very beautiful in its own right. There's some beautiful things involved there. It's just not for me.
The thing is, you had the upbringing, so you
oh, yes.
it isn't like you never knew anything about it. You had the upbringing, that's always going to influence. Even if you don't agree with it, you know it's there.
The knowledge is 100% there. I always tell people, it's funny because people say, how can you not believe in it? You've been in the paranormal for how many flipping years? And I'm like, because number one, I have never seen anything that evidenced to me that it wasn't man-made, that this was not concocted and fueled by things of mankind. I said, what people identify as demonic in many ways, at least to my experience, and that doesn't, it's a nodule compared to what it actually has. Normal. I haven't had the exposure, of millions. It's very nominal, and I will 100% take that, into exception. But to me, every time I've experienced something where people said, "Oh, we have something evil here. We need this cleansed," which I always say, you can't really do that. That's not how that works. It was a psychology in the situation, and I'll say that it was perceptional. You go in and they're terrified. They're 100% terrified, which feeds this energy into the building that is just, it's palpable. It's like stepping on crackers. And, you sit there and you say, well, you're living in this now. You've now created this maelstrom of not even just, fear is one of the most negative energies on the planet. It's horrible. It eats your brain. Do you ever read Frank Herbert's Dune? There's a quote in there that I love. Fear is a mind killer. And I 100% agree with that. It numbs people. It makes free up. They tend to make very bad decisions, and anything that goes wrong, they tend to place blame on something they can't identify. And that's what I've always found to be true in these, where I'm like, okay, so let me get this right. Something moved in your house. Can't explain how it moved. You've seen things, shadows. You've been poked, or you feel like you've been poked. You have things, you know, come off the walls, and you think that's a demon for what reason? I mean, I just...
Well, and part of the thing, too, is, if you know, and that's what the TV shows taught people. But the reality is, if a demon wants to get you and get your soul, if you follow that line of thinking, that the role of the demon is to get your soul, so you're going to go to hell instead of going to heaven, and that's the role of the demon. The demon isn't going to sit there and try to smack you in the back of the head. He's going to sit there and try to entice you with things you shouldn't have. Oh, just think of the nice car you'd have if you'd only robbed that convenience store. Think of all the fun you'd have if you left your wife for that blonde next door. He's not going to come at you with horns and a pitchfork. The devil's going to come at you with everything you ever wanted.
But again, and that's how. But don't you think we leave ourselves open with that susceptibility mentally by not? Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's a psychology involved here. And that's what kind of gets me, that people, you know, and they'll say to you, well, you're pagan, so it doesn't matter to you. No, I understand and I accept that there's good and there's evil. But I believe that 99.9% of right.
Yeah. You're pagan is a choice. It's not an uneducated choice.
Right. It's me saying, listen, I believe more in nature, in the nature of men, in the nature of everything that surrounds us than I do in giving names to things that we can't identify. That's kind of my view of it.
Yeah, but how are you going to do a reality TV show if you don't believe in all this crazy stuff?
Oh, no, they don't, honey. Let me tell you, reality TV doesn't want to touch me anyway, because I happen to be like an intelligent female who's not afraid to be intelligent, which, production companies tend to not like that, because you'll call a spade a spade. And yeah, they don't want a spade called a spade. They want what's going to sell. And I've always said that to people. Mm-hmm. They want to sell a product. I was actually approached not too long ago to be part of a radio show of somebody who's very, very well known in this field. And I turned it down, because part of what that person wanted me to do was to market spells, because I am a witch. You know, I need to spell so you can send people to this website to buy the ingredients they need to do the spell that you told them to do to help them through something. What? I was like, I said to him, I can't, are you kidding me? No, that goes against everything I know. Number one, a spell is, to a witch, a spell is what a prayer is to a Catholic, okay? It's the basic, it's not the wording. I said, you people are so messed up. It's the tone. It's the tone. I said, we're chanting. Do you ever notice that prayers are either in rhythm or they're sung or they're chanted? That's why, because you're talking about acoustical value, a frequency. You're not talking.
There's a cadence to all that.
Yes, there absolutely is. And it resonates with everything around you. It's about manipulation through frequency. I mean, there's a lot of science involved in paganism. I always try to tell people that's why I love it. There's a lot of science involved. And if you understand that on a deeper level, it becomes something very special to you, because you're understanding that you're working within something that makes a lot of sense. That's, and even Christians knew it. Christians knew it. Muslims know it. The Jews know it. The Chinese knew it. I mean, think about the chants of the Buddhist monks. Think about how rhythmic they are, how beautiful they are. You know, even solfeggio frequencies, which are the frequencies of the tuning fork, which were used by the monks, those can actually alter your DNA. Like, you know, people, there's a reason behind religion, and it's a lot more deep than you think it is. And it has nothing to do with condemning people. It's got nothing to do with who's going to hell and who's not. It's got everything to do with being in sync with everything around you.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's all about, everything boils down to the whole frequency of it all. Mm-hmm. And like Tesla said, everything is frequency and vibration. You match that frequency to the reality you want, and that's your reality. And part of the whole Project Psi is, why can one medium connect with a certain spirit, other mediums can't, and yet it can go back and forth. And a big part of what I'm finding out is when I can identify the frequency of the that the medium is operating on, that medium can connect with other spirits and souls in its Fibonacci sequence or in her own golden ratio. And it gets back to where math is the language of the universe. Everything boils down to math. And I know a lot of people don't like math, so nope, it can't be that, because I sure as shit don't understand that. But the reality is, it's science and it's all math. And matching that frequency. If we can get that medium to change their frequency a bit, now they're tuned into a whole different Fibonacci sequence, and they can connect with a whole different crowd of spirits. And it's all, like you said, just like the chanting is frequencies. So much of the science is going back to the Eastern religions, the Hinduism, because those older Eastern religions understood that, like you said, it's the frequency, it's the connection, it's the vibration. And that's where the science is really looking.
Well, and it's interesting too, because, you know, you and I had discussed how it also goes back to the pineal gland in a lot of ways. And I had told you, through research and everything else, that's where I ended up, was looking at the pineal gland and going, wait a minute.
If you look at the eyeball, the retina of the eye has two sensors, rods and cones. Now, rods are very detail-oriented. We have about 20,000 more rods than we do cones. And rods are focused in our peripheral vision, and they only see black and white. Cones are for foveal vision, straight on, and they see color. Now, the interesting thing to the pineal gland buried in the middle of the brain, it has rods and cones in it. Now, where is it picking up that light? It's picking up photons that are traveling through the atmosphere and through the universe. And that's why the pineal gland is so good at remote viewing, because it can see the photons that aren't in the room as a light exposure like our eyes see. But yet it still can pick up on these photons.
When what's interesting too, though, is that this is something that the ancients knew. I mean, we're just rediscovering it now.
Yeah.
They knew it.
Look at all the hieroglyphics that they've got. If you do a sagittal plane slice of the brain and you see the pineal gland and the way it's shaped and the structure of the corpus callosum around it, you look at some of these hieroglyphic drawings from the ancient Egyptians, and there it is.
Well, even the Holy Bible actually mentions it by name. And they mention the veil, which is what we have come to believe is one of the secretions. In fact, it was medically at some point in time, I believe in the early 20th century, they were referring to the secretion from the pineal as the veil. It's referred to that as that in the Bible, and they were saying how that was the gate to heaven, and it's I think well, of course, because the pineal, if you think about it, and you think about it, the fact that it is the third eye in a lot of ways, you're telling me it's cones in the pineal, which, like I said, you told me that the other day on the phone. I was like, what? I did not know that. I mean, and I thought that's why they call it the third eye. That's exactly why they call it the third eye, because it's sensing. Yeah. Well, basically the unconscious, it can see that dimensional realm. That's what it is. Yep. That's exactly what it is. That's what I'm probably using when I'm sleeping. That's probably what's kicking on in my sleep. That's allowing me to see either events or places or people that I have no connection to, have no clue how they end up in my dreams, but it ends up occurring. I'm obviously able to see something in the Akashic. I'm sorry, folks, again, if you probably would call it the unconscious. I call it the Akashic. That's just the pagan in me. But the Akashic is actually...
It doesn't matter, you know? Potato, potato.
But it's literally the Hall of Records. And when people say, well, it's the Hall of Records. Well, the Hall of Records, I mean, I think Edgar Cayce was the one that coined that term, but it's a very ancient belief system. It goes back about 6,000 years, if you want to track all the different pagan beliefs that talk about it. But it is literally, it's the collection of everything. Yep.
Yes.
It's the past, the present, and the future. The entire universe, all the other universes, all in basically there. It's a collective, an archive, and a future archive. It's everything that's going to happen, mm-hmm. everything that has happened. That's why I always tell people, time is not linear. Time is not anywhere close to linear. In fact, no. I have somebody in my chat right now, Jason Porter. Jason's with a paranormal team up in North Carolina who's done some incredible research right now with EVPs where they had this one connection they've made. They've made a breakthrough with a spirit. And everything this person is responding to, or this what used to be a person is responding to, backs up quantum theory. It backs up that time is not linear. Because when they
time is a construct that we use,
yes,
so that we can sit there and make sense out of reality, but
right.
But it's only a human construct.
And that's I have said that for years, and people don't know that for a fact because I just know it. I'm telling you, just know it because I wouldn't be able to dream forward and backwards with events backwards that I could not have seen. And forwards, events, there's no way I could have known it was coming. It's not,
right.
It can't be linear because I'm going to a place that's not, I'm not moving forward or back. It's just there. It's just happening. So it's.
And there's a lot of physicists that feel everything that's happened and that's going to happen all happened at the same time. And now we're putting it into a linear fashion for our reality because it's easier for us to understand. But in reality, it's all happened. It's all over with, and the party's over.
It's not the truth, but people don't like to hear that again because humans we're so frail in so many ways mentally. We really are.
We are. So many ways. But part of the more of physicism is finding out that reality is nothing but a hologram.
Yes, the holographic universe.
Now, so now I've got a theoretical question out there. Is it one big hologram, or do we each have our own hologram? Just like when you have a dream, and you dream about the people in there who you may or may not know, but they're in your dream. So now, is our reality just a dream? And right now, in my reality, I'm talking on the phone to you, on your radio show, but in your reality, you're out on the beach surfing.
Yep.
Or is it a global reality and we're all in the same reality?
Well, you know what? You got to wonder though, because are you familiar with Princeton's eggshell? Their experiment with global consciousness? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Because that's, to me, I'm wondering if that kind of proves that it might be multiple holographic universes, but on some level, it intersects. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like creates some kind of a wave because that experiment.
Are they parallel realities that are all stacked together? And sometimes, you know, we go a little bit over the yellow line and I go from my reality into your reality.
Yeah. That's,
who knows?
You don't know. And like I said, but I think we're getting closer. And I think that's what
we are.
Important. Slowly. You know, we're starting to you know, like Shrek would say, life's, you know, it's an onion. You're peeling back the layers.
When, but, I started ghost hunting in 1972. So I've been doing this a long time. And, as much as I love tripping around in the dark and having fun, it's a great, but for 99.9% of the ghost hunters out there, they all go, I'm in it for the science. All right, well, what's your hypothesis? How are you doing your research? Nobody's doing research. They're in it because they're having fun tripping around in the dark. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just don't call it science. If you're in it for the science, create a hypothesis and prove or disprove your theory. But don't sit there and say, oh, I'm in it for the science, when you really just like having a shit scared out of you. And sadly, that's what most of them out there are doing. And it's fine. You know, I truly am doing research. I've got the Project Psi, and we're really doing a cognitive and a neural look at how all this connects. But that doesn't mean on a Saturday night I don't like running around in a dark basement getting EVPs. I love EVPs. Just a couple of months ago, we started tracking down, me and a buddy of mine, we were tracking down I'm in Fort Worth, Texas right now, and we found out that the only picture of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, even though they were robbing trains and banging stuff in Wyoming, when they wanted a break, they would come down to Fort Worth, Texas, because the bordello's down here. And they, in 1900, that's where Sundance met at a place. She was working in Fort Worth, Texas. And then, as the movie says, they went to Bolivia, and she left and came back. When she came back to Fort Worth, Texas, and opened a bordello in Fort Worth. And we tracked all this down. We spent weeks tracking all this down. And we went to where she ended up dying in she was smoking in bed and set herself on fire in 1962. And she died right here in Fort Worth. And we wanted to know, we knew that Sundance died in Duchesne, Wyoming in 1936, using the name William Long. But we wanted to know, Butch Cassidy, his sister was a Utah state legislature person all the way up into the 80s. And she always said that, yeah, he didn't die in Bolivia. He came back and he died in Spokane, Washington in 1937. So we knew that, but she would never give up what his name was. So we went to the old hotel where Etta Place set herself on fire, and we asked her what was Butch Cassidy's name when he died in Spokane. And she gave us the name, and we went did the research, and sure enough, there he is, buried in Spokane, Washington. So I love ghost hunting, getting EVPs and getting some cool pictures and video. It's great, but it's not research. It's not science. It's fun.
I always tell people, do the scientific method. Problem is with ghost hunting, because we don't have a clear-cut answer as to what it is we seek, the scientific method is next to impossible, because you don't have anything theoretically really to solidly link into.
But that's because you're looking, you want to solve the big picture.
Right.
Take it smaller. Take it smaller to one thing. Take a look at what why do we sometimes get a picture? Now, a lot of times we get a picture and it's just ectoplasmic mist. Other times we get a partial torso vaporization. Other times we get a full apparition. Why do we get, how much energy does it take? Tackle one small problem. If you tackle that one problem, and you take a scientific approach and you solve that problem, in essence, you're solving the whole thing.
You know what? That's a good question. What is ectoplasm? What discharge would ectoplasm be identified as? Think about that.
The answer I got, me and a buddy of mine, Kevin, up in Naperville, Illinois, he has a ghost tour up in Naperville, and we were investigating this house for months. And the husband and wife wanted the place, and we got to where we were getting so many EVPs out of this guy. We would walk up with the recorder going, and as we walk up, turn the recorder on, take a few more steps. Charles Hillegas, it's Kevin and Chuck again. And then we'd ask our question. When we go back and listen to the EVP, as we're walking up, Hillegas would go, "Hi, Kevin. Hi, Chuck." He would talk to us before we would talk to him. We had a beautiful rapport with this guy. And we asked him, why do we get different levels of pictures and different things? And he says it takes a lot. And this was through several different questions. He didn't give us a paragraph. When we developed forensic EVPs, where we'd use EVPs to solve a case, we would sit there. You can't ask Abe Lincoln for the Gettysburg Address. But we would ask, you know, did you know you were going to get shot? We can get yes or no answers. So if you plan your questions where you're looking for a short answer of two or three words, and you have a series of questions, they will take your questions to the next level, kind of like a yes-no grid, and you can sit there and solve your problem. And one of the things was that it takes different amount of energy for them to appear as an apparition, and depending on how much energy they have is what we see.
Interesting.
And that was, I think, I think it took like 22 questions to get that answer.
But you got to wonder, again, what exactly is it? What does it consist of, though? That's where my question's going. I mean, on a logical level, I'm thinking, well, obviously, ectoplasm, because we're given it a name, we understand that it is there. Is it a mist? It's obviously in some type of state or form where it's visible in certain pictures, and sometimes it's physically visible.
If you look at the best ghost picture you've ever seen that you know is valid, and the ones that were created long before Photoshop was invented, best ghost pictures are semi-translucent. And what according to Hillegas, and this took about a week of different questions till we got the whole answer put together, it's they pull together the energy in the air, and basically they end up making a two-dimensional hologram for us to see, and that's what we're looking at.
Very interesting. We're going to the fact that it's almost like a bioelectrical hologram. You know what I'm saying? It's intriguing. Yeah. I mean, when I think about it, my brain is like, oh, let's start researching. I mean, it gets me excited because I'm looking at saying, okay, if I could literally try to identify what that is, that's giving me another piece. And I can go further with that. But, you know, good luck trying to identify it. But still, it doesn't mean you don't try. But you know what? With that, I'm looking at time, and it's already – we only have 4 more minutes. And I want you to be able to tell people where they can find you. You know, tell us about your – I know you're moving to Venice, Florida, and you're looking to open up an office. Where can people contact you? Because you have so much information. And I know I actually have a remote healer in my chat right now. So I know when we were talking about that earlier, that had to have been –
Well, real quickly, find out where that remote healer lives.
He's in California. I know exactly where he is. He's in California.
California. Because next year I'm taking the Paraneural Lab on the road, and in January I'll probably be in Vegas, but I don't think I'm going to be able to get to California. Anyway, I'm Dr. Chuck Kennedy. On Facebook, it's Dr. Chuck, one word, because Facebook won't let you use prefixes. Anyway, the research project is Project Psi, and Project Psi, PSI, projectpsi.com, and on there is my phone number. On there is my email address. Christina does the cognitive portion. Her email address is on there. So you can reach us at projectpsi.com, and it's Dr. Chuck at projectpsi.com, and the phone number is 888-583-1976. So,
all right.
I will be taking the Paraneural Lab on the road. I'm looking for mediums, psychics, empaths, and anyone who had a near-death experience or a major paranormal event. And I want to hook you up to my EEG machine and do a transcranial Doppler of your brain and basically see how you think.
Nah. So please get in touch with me so I can.
Well, I can't wait to get to Florida. I want to hook you up.
And no, guys, you cannot sell pictures of that on the internet. Just saying, okay? It'd probably be considered porn to some people, but all right, guys, with that, I'm gonna take my show out of here for the evening. Rocky is following me up. He's got his show coming on next. I'm not sure who's guest is, but Rocky's shows are always entertaining, so stay tuned for him. With that, guys, have a terrific week. We'll talk to you again next Sunday. Be good. And you guys know how it is with the paranormal. You know, try to keep your patience. It is a stealth 12-step program. You know what? Never give up on this field, because it is one of the most intriguing things. And the deeper you get into it, the more you learn, the better off you are, because you're not just helping yourself. You're helping everybody around you. All right? With that, have a great night. Love y'all.
Thanks, man. Bye.
All right.